Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 121 of Season 5 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Matthew Simpson of Awesome Friday, even though today's Thursday. But welcome back to the show, Matthew.
Well, I mean, Awesome Friday, as we say on the show, Awesome Friday is a state of mind, not a time and place, so it works. And thank you for having me. It's been a great time so far, and I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you back also. It's always fun talking about credits for longer than one expects to talk about credits. Finding all the little the little fun tidbits along the way. Yeah, that's what.
Yeah, and I got to say, you've done a bang up job just like digging into these credits and pulling out interesting facts. Like I looked at them a little bit, but like you've been really like dove in, and I got to say, I very much appreciate that.
Well, come on. This is my fifth season doing this. So, you know, and I'm not one, you know, there are people who do these shows and don't do the credits. And, you know, I can honestly say that I don't watch the credits on every single movie that I watch, since I do watch a hell of a lot of movies. But, you know, for these, I believe that, you know, when you're breaking down a movie, then you need to break it down completely. And one of the things you do is you break down the credits, and, you know, you'll mm-hmm. always find something interesting in the credits. If you look, you know,
as evidenced by this show, it's, you're doing a great job. I just wanted to make sure you knew that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I thank you for that. My next season will be a little more difficult to do that, since there are no credits at the end of the movie. But yeah, we'll have to see.
Oh, have you announced what your next season is going
to
be?
No, not yet. So people are going to have to wait until this coming Monday, and they'll be able to, you know, to be able to hear it. We're getting there. You know, on Sunday, I'll probably announce what Monday's movie is going to be. For anyone who hasn't been, you know, I like throwing out hints along the way. And, you know, early on, maybe in this season, I even mentioned, or maybe it was last season, I mentioned what I was planning on doing. But people are just going to have to come back on Monday to find out specifically what it is. But it is a black and white movie. That's the one tidbit that I will give at this point, which means that, you know, that was back in the days when all the credits were at the beginning. So like the first 2 minutes of the movie, the first 2 minutes of the movie are all the credits, you know, instead of doing them at the end. And most of the credits they have in those movies are, you know, the above the line credits. You know, we're not going to get, I don't think we're going to get, you know, sound editors and Foley editors and things like that. And yeah. But
craft services.
That's right. Wait, hey, craft services is something we're going to talk about today. You're jumping the gun a little bit, Matthew.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, whatever the next movie is, and I'm gonna ask you again when we're not recording, but whatever the next movie is, I look forward to it.
Okay. I'm glad. Thank you. Even though you already told me you didn't want to be a part of it, but that's fine.
Wait, did I?
Yes, you did. But that's okay. That's okay. I will definitely hopefully have you back for season 7 when we do Die Hard 3. You know, that the Die Hards, it's nice. Those are the ones that I'm, you know, that it's the every other season will be a Die Hard. That is the plan. Again, at least for 2 more. 7 and 9, the plan is Die Hard 3, Die Hard 4. I don't think I'm going to do Die Hard 5 in this format. I will probably, my assumption at this point, and again, I'm still a few years away, but my assumption is I will probably do it as a bonus episode. Just me and a few other people, you know, making fun of the, maybe doing a real-time commentary or something like that. That's what's in my mind right now. Who knows what'll be in, how many seasons is that? That would theoretically be, well, actually it would be the end of the 9th season. So it's still got 4 seasons until I get there. You know, so, yeah.
I mean, or instead of doing a bad Die Hard movie, you could do a good non-Die Hard Die Hard movie. Just saying, like just jump to the same format but different franchise.
No, I can do that after. You know, and I at this point it's open ended. You know, I don't. You know, there are people who say okay, they're gonna do a franchise and that's it. They're gonna, you know, move along, stuff like that. But I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. Episode 121 begins with the recording mixer credit and ends with visual effects credits from ILM. So yesterday we ended things, you know, we were talking about some of the sound editors. You know, we had Bub Assman, who worked with Clint Eastwood, won two Oscars for his work with Eastwood. And then the credits continue. So we got the re-recording mixers and the ADR editors and the Foley mixers and all those things. And, you know, I mean, to me, it always amazes me the number of people that they need for all of these type of, you know, to the number of people to put together a movie. And again, this is a movie from 33 years ago. Today, you know, there are movies that you sit through, you know, 10, 12 minutes of credits. You know, here,
yep.
this movie, I think, has 6 minutes of credits or 7 minutes of credits, which for the that time, it still was, you know, pretty long, but still, you know, just all the different people who have to do things here, just unbelievable. And then we
yes.
Right. Then we get into the special effects coordinator, and then they have a list of all the people who worked on the special effects of this movie. To me, it you know, there are 27 people listed here, you know, and that just, you know, again, 27 people working on special effects in a movie like this. You know, this is not a Marvel movie. Most of the effects probably have to, they're probably practical effects. You know, the whole idea of having, you know, the plane crash and you know, even just showing a plane flying through the air. Stuff like that, or maybe the fight scenes and stuff like that, you know, with the squibs and all that stuff. I don't know. And so
yeah, all the bits and pieces required to put it together. And,
that's right.
You know, they can't couldn't fake it with computers like they can today. And even that would, you know, that might actually lead to more credits now because you need multiple animators and
correct
designers and so on.
Yeah, I mean, for me, what I always find interesting is that when you have, I always prefer practical effects. You know, obviously, in practical effects, when you're dealing with movies dealing with sci-fi in the future and or different worlds and stuff like that, obviously, it's much more difficult to do it and make it seem as real, you know, as you can do today with you know, different CGI graphics or stuff like that. So I'm not against it, but in action movies, to me, you know, there's nothing like knowing that the type of stuff they did here was all practical, you know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So of the 27 people that are listed here in the special effects team, there's one that jumped out at me and I decided to look up, and that's Timothy Capps. And it says his credit here is Timothy T.C. Capps, you know, and so the name just jumped out at me. So I said, all right, I'm going to go check it out and see what it is. And what I found out here is that this is his only movie credit.
It's his only one.
It's the only movie credit on IMDb. This is the only time he's here. You know, this TC, Timothy Capps. So
wonder if he's somebody's nephew or something.
It could be. I mean, there was nothing listed on IMDb about him besides the fact that this was his own movie. His only movie that he was in. And then after that, we have the construction coordinator, followed by the graphic artist. And the graphic artist, his name jumped out at me. His name is Jimmy J. Hinkle. So I said, okay, that name sounds a little interesting. And the standby painter is named John Hinkle. So again, it goes back to what we were talking about the last 2 days, you know, that these must be family businesses. So you have the graphic artist and the standby painter, who both have the last name Hinkle, which again makes it sound as if there's some sort of relationship between them. So Jimmy J. Hinkle, his name is actually James Hinkle. And, you know, you were talking 2 days ago about that James Horner unfortunately passed away on your birthday, but James Hinkle and I actually share a birthday. He was born on January 11th, 1953. He's obviously 21 years older than I am, but you know, I just found it very interesting that we do share the day, not the date, not the year. You know, and he has 43 production design credits, 29 art department credits, and 9 art director credits in IMDb. And it mentions a trivia bit about him where it says that he is ranked within the top 100 tennis players in South California, and that he is also an avid surfer. You know, and this guy's 70 years old now, so I find that quite interesting. I don't know when that piece of trivia is from, but you know, the fact that you have the guy who's the graphic artist, who is also, you know, an avid surfer and tennis player, you know, was pretty interesting. And the other guy, John Hinkle, who again I couldn't find out whether they were brothers or how they're related. He has 29 credits in the art department and 1 in the production design. So again, I don't know their real connection, but my assumption is that there is some familial connection between the two of them. That would be my guess.
I wonder. And honestly, it would be equally interesting to me whether they are or are not. Because like we've seen so many like family connections in these credits so far, it would actually be interesting to have two people with the same name that just aren't connected for a change.
Right, that's true. Also, you know, it's just coincidence that we had two Hinkles, you know, working in the art department.
And especially with such like, I don't know that Hinkle is the most uncommon name in the world, but it's definitely not the most common either. So it would actually be maybe more interesting if they weren't related.
Yeah. That's true. Well, you know, if I really had the time and inclination, you know, to try and cross-reference their movies would also be interesting, you know, if they worked on the same movies together, meaning then you say, okay, there must be some sort of connection between them, you know, but, you know, I'm not going to go through 29 different credits of each of them just to double check, you know, to see if there's, you know, what movies correspond. You know, between the two of them, but anything's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Again, I would love to be able to do it, but you know, it just that's actually very time consuming.
For sure. Yeah, I was just looking through the credits for the special effects guys. We took a short break, and a name actually jumped out of the list for me. If you look in the special effects credits, and it's actually a person. The reason I didn't notice it initially when I watched the film is that he's apparently uncredited, but he's on IMDb, and that's a guy called Michael Meyer.
Michael Meyer?
Which scary, but also he's an uncredited pyrotechnician.
Oh, have
you seen this guy before? And it feels like on this movie, which very prominently features several large explosions, maybe the pyrotechnician should have been credited. But also, it gets even more interesting than this. If you look up this on IMDb, so his name is Michael Meyer. He's tragically he passed a couple years ago, but he has a number of credits on IMDb, and almost all of them, there's like almost 20 of them, are actually in the sound department. But he has a dozen credits in the special effects departments. They are all for pyrotechnician, and all of them except for one are uncredited. So,
oh, wow.
I just find that kind of fascinating. Like, is this guy just like in the sound department and just being like, hey, are you going to, can I help you blow something up? I don't know how you get into blowing stuff up and get uncredited for it. But that just seems, there's got to be something going on there.
Maybe, right? Maybe it was by accident.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a good guy to have on set. Maybe he just caused problems.
They're like, hey, Meyer, get rid of that cigarette. And he just threw it on the side and it, you know, completely blew something out.
Yeah. But of all the films, and like a lot of these films where he's an uncredited pyrotechnician, like they're not small films. There's The Hunt for Red October, Die Hard 2, The Rocketeer. But the only one where he's actually credited as a pyrotechnician is apparently Back to the Future 3.
Interesting.
And I just find this kind of fascinating. It's like how do you become a pyrotechnician? How do you do it so many times uncredited? And how do you get credited the one time on like a Western that, I guess there's a big explosion at the end, right? When the train goes over the ravine, spoiler alert, but.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about other uncredited things that he's done, he was a carpenter on Basic Instinct, you know?
I mean.
This is definitely a guy who he was in, you know, he is uncredited on the Swing Gang in 9 months and in The Rock. I don't know what a Swing Gang is.
You know, I don't know. It must be some kind of construction. He's also apparently like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, he's got like 7 or 8 credits as uncredited as a lighting technician on movies like The Presidio and The Doors. Oh, and wow. I Know What You Did Last Summer. Like, this guy seems to have been very steadily working in Hollywood and not getting a ton of credit for it.
That's right. Wow. Here, he was a cable person in the movie Big Eyes. And then he was uncredited as the cable person in The Pursuit of Happiness. Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah,
it's weird, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, most of his credits are uncredited. I find that fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I had trouble actually finding him when you told me his name because, you know, his name is spelled M-E-I-E-R. Yeah. You know, I was looking for M-Y-E-R or, yeah.
I mean, maybe he was just Michael Myers. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
And he needed to keep a low profile.
That's right.
Maybe he was on the lam or something.
It's very possible. And he has a son that's listed in IMDb. And his son has one credit for he was on the TV show Midnight Caller as a boy on bike.
That makes sense because according to this, the man himself, Michael Myers, did like 13 episodes of that show.
There you go.
And spoiler alert, was uncredited for all of them.
But his son got credited as the boy on bike. So there you go.
It's just fascinating how many of his credits are just not credited.
Yeah,
like
seriously,
I think I can count on one hand the number of times he actually would have shown up in the credits for all of these things that are listed here.
Right, it's true. No, but again, that's the good thing about IMDb. On IMDb, he is credited with all of the things that in the movies themselves he's uncredited.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah. But actually, if you think about it, he doesn't have that many credits. Was he have his?
No, he's not.
His
like
40.
A,
his like he has a total of 46. Amount. 46 credits total. So.
Yeah, and I think I'm just looking at the movie database, which is IMDb's like open source competitor, and they only list stuff that he actually got credit. That people actually get credited for. So of the 46, 7 of them he was actually in the credits.
Oh, okay.
So, it's like less than, it's like 20% maybe, give or take.
Yeah, that's true. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. It's bonkers.
Yeah, it really is. All right. So moving along in the credits, we get all the various assistants. We have assistants to Larry Gordon. He has 3. Assistant Joel Silver, he's got 1, who I wonder if she later became a producer, along with the one we talked about yesterday. assistant to Chuck Gordon, assistant to Steve Perry. Rennie Harlan has 2 assistants. Bruce Willis has 2 assistants. It's interesting. Right. So Joel Silver's assistant, her name is Jennifer Todd. So let's see if Jennifer Todd was able to do something else in the movie industry after being Joel Silver's assistant in this movie. And oh yes, she's a producer. There you go. She has 40 credits as a producer.
It's interesting too, actually, because wasn't the other woman we talked about who's a producer who was Joel Silver's assistant also Suzanne Todd? Her name is Todd too, right? Maybe there's another family thing going on there.
Maybe. That's right. Oh wow, because it's Jennifer Todd and Suzanne Todd. Yeah. She's married to Chris Messina. And she is the younger sister of Suzanne Todd. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. Family business.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And as I said, she's been married to Chris Messina for a number of years. So don't know how long, doesn't state here, but it just says that they have two children that were both born, was it 15, 16 years ago? So, you know, so I guess they've been together at least that long.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Wow, interesting. Okay. And then as the credits continue, I love we get like a first aid guy. And then I always love looking at the transportation guys. So you have the transportation coordinator. His name is Captain, in quotes, Jack Leetsky. All right. So I looked it up. And I just love the fact that he's known as the captain. You know, these are the guys who are driving everyone around on the set or off the set or between places and stuff like that. And, you know, he has 24 credits on IMDb in the transportation department. He was born in 1933 and passed away in 2011, which means that he was 78 when he passed away. And when this movie was made, he was 57. So, you know, he's the captain. So he was doing stuff there. And then, you know, we have a list of the five drivers. And then we have four transportation captains who are not named captain. And then we have the caterer. So we have the caterer. It says caterer, Tony's Food Service. And then underneath it says Tony Karam. So, you know, that got me thinking, is Tony's Food Service the name of the company that Tony Karam owns? And it turns out it is.
I mean, that tracks.
Yeah. But no, it is funny that they would have both of them listed there, you know, as opposed to just saying that the caterer is, you know, Tony's Food Service. And so he himself, Tony Karam, has 67 credits in IMDb as the caterer. And Tony's Food Service is listed on 198 titles that they're the caterers.
Oh, I wonder if maybe they must have multiple, maybe because all of, I'm looking at Tony Karam right now, and basically all of his personal credits are like caterer or chef.
That's right. That's right.
So perhaps Tony's Food Service, maybe he has another chef working for him.
Well, he does, because he has a nephew whose name is Ivan Karam, who is a chef and who is listed.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. He's also a movie chef. Now, I mean, have you ever been on a movie set? I never have. Have you ever been on a movie set?
Not. So I live in Vancouver. And Vancouver is a place where lots of things film. So I've never been like purposefully on a movie set, but I have wandered into them multiple times in my life here in Vancouver. And you can just sort of hang out and watch people film stuff and watch things happen. But no, I've never been invited. I've only ever stumbled into them.
Right. So like for me, I just, you know, I always hear the term craft service, you know, that those are the people who make sure that there's always food around for the cast members and stuff like that. So like immediately after, we have a credit for the craft services. So it got me thinking, okay, well, what's the difference between craft service and a caterer? Like if the whole idea of craft service is you have all these tables that are filled with food, you know, for everyone. So wouldn't it just be the same company that's, you know, preparing the food and then putting it out? I mean, I don't think that the caterer is preparing the food and then bringing it to the craft service guy.
I mean, I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe it's snacks versus meals, or maybe it's like preparation versus coordination.
No, I think you hit it. Like I think you hit it on the nose with your first guess. Difference between snacks and so it says craft service is different from catering. Craft service refers to the food always available to the crew while they're working, while catering is provided by a catering company or a restaurant that handles full meals. So there you go. See?
Right.
Typically, there is one main table where the snacks and coffee are set up, which is simply called crafty or the crafty table. Occasionally, there are two craft service stations, with one being for the cast and crew and another for non-union background actors. Ah, so they got different food for those guys. A satellite crafty may set up next to the camera, as they may not be able to leave their workstations. In addition to snacks and drinks, the craft service department clears the set of trash. Aside from snacks and beverages, craft services may also supply bandages, aspirin, gum, antacids, toothpicks, hand sanitizers, sunscreen, and hand warmers. So, yeah. So now I know what the difference between a craft service and the caterer is. So, yeah.
Well, now so do the rest of us.
That's right.
Yay. The more you know.
That's right. And knowing is half the battle, right? Now, I'm going to mention something here now, but we're going to talk about it tomorrow. They have listed here someone as the video playback operator, and the name is David Katz. Just keep that in mind for tomorrow. We'll get back. We'll U-turn back to here tomorrow, you know, to keep everyone on the edge of their seats. And then we get the credits for ILM. So you have visual effects by ILM, a division of LucasArts Entertainment Company, Marin County, California. And then the supervisor of visual effects is named Michael McAllister. You know, maybe related to, actually, Home Alone didn't come out yet. 1990, wait. Home Alone came out this year, didn't it? 1990? If I remember correctly.
You know, I don't remember. That sounds right, though. Yeah, 1990.
Yeah, so Kevin McAllister, maybe this is one of his brothers. Or maybe it's his father. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, maybe he's working in Hollywood while his son is home alone in New York.
There you go. And it is Christmas time, so it could be around the same time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have a list of all the different people who are working on ILM. There are quite a lot. I mean, compared to a heavily special effects movie, there isn't very much here, but they still do a nice job of giving us a bunch of people from ILM that are mentioned here. You know, you have the visual effects editors and coordinators, and you know, you have the executive in charge of post-production, and three visual effects camera operators and production coordinators, and a matte camera supervisor. So yeah, nothing really jumped out at me among them, the credits here for the people from ILM. You know, I was actually hoping that I would find like names that I'm aware of. The closest that I can come to here is Jennifer Knoll is here, and so I was thinking maybe she's related to, you know, to a famous Knoll from ILM. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who the famous Knoll from ILM is?
That's John.
That's right.
John, right?
John Knoll.
John Knoll, yeah.
This is John Knoll's wife.
Mm-hmm.
The two of them have four kids together, and she worked on The Hunt for October, Ghostbusters 2, Die Hard 2.
Hmm.
You know, those are the ones that jump out. In general, she only worked on six movies in the visual effects department. She also worked on Back to the Future Part 2, Space Invaders, and Back to the Future Part 3. You know, she was the visual effects coordinator on five out of six of those, and then on Space Invaders, she was the production supervisor.
Hmm. So it looks like her husband has been busy, keeping busy enough for both of them, because he's working on all the current Star Wars stuff.
That's right.
So yeah, I think they're probably fine. If they have four kids, someone's got to take care of them, I guess.
Right. Now, my assumption is that the kids were probably born around this time. You know, maybe that's why she intermittently was on movies at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because if she was born in 63, so if this came out, so she was 27 at the time that she was working on this movie. So
timeline.
Yeah, timeline makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute? Anything jump out at you?
No, not really.
Okay.
There's definitely like a ton of names from ILM, but I didn't recognize any of them.
Right. Exactly. You know, again, it would be interesting to go through them one by one and see, you know, who's still working at ILM after 30 years, you know. But no, anyone out there who wants to do it, go ahead. Let me know. There. You know, there are certain things I'm willing to do minute by minute. I don't know if that's one of them that I'm going to, you know, go and spend the time cross-referencing, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right. So, again, no script, because we are done with the script at this point. And so basically what we have is the segment for Thursday. So Thursday's segment today is called Aviation Thursday, where my guests will give their top five movies that are somehow related to aviation, whether it's movies dealing with planes, airports, spacecraft, something like that, something that's related to aviation. So, Matthew, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
So yeah, I'm gonna as my number five, I'm gonna go with a plane-based action movie, and I'm gonna go with one that I mentioned a couple of days ago, and that is Executive Decision, which is let's be honest, it's not necessarily a great film, but it's a good film, and it's basically Die Hard on a plane. It features an early death scene by Steven Seagal, and a fun performance by Kurt Russell, and an early performance by Halle Berry as well. And also a delightful, and one of the, I think, only times I can remember seeing David Suchet playing anyone other than Poirot. And I actually really like David Suchet, and I kind of wish I got to see him more in other roles.
Okay, that's fair. Now, do you know an actor that is both in this movie and an Executive Decision?
Yeah, because John Leguizamo is like a main like special forces team member in this, and he's like unnamed thug number four in Die Hard 2.
No, he's named. His
I
name
know he has
is Bert.
I know he has a name.
His name is
I know he's a
Bert.
name, but he dies really early,
No, he
so
doesn't. He's
I don't
one of
I,
the last ones to die. We talked about this a few days ago. He's the one who dies along with Garber. He either died,
Oh, that's right. I
in
remember
on
now.
the snowmobile, in the lake, or just getting shot by John, who steals his snowmobile.
Yeah, during the big chase. Yeah, I remember
It's one of those two.
now. Yeah, and he's one of those ones where when you see him, you're like, oh, wow, that's a child version of the guy who I know. It's let's see here. So let's move on, I guess, to number four. And I actually had a lot of trouble putting this list together
Well, I don't make
because
this
there's a
easy
lot of
for
good
you.
movies.
Come on.
Well, there's just a lot of good plane movies, but I think for my number four, I'm gonna have to go with the Nicolas Cage classic Con Air, which,
Ooh.
again,
Jay and
I
Mark will be happy
don't
that you did
know.
that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is a movie that I don't know if it's like good, but it's also incredible, and features some just incredible character lot work and line work from Nicolas Cage and John Malkovich in particular. And it's basically nonstop fun, and I enjoy every frame of it. I do have a hard time getting past Nicolas Cage's like weird southern-esque accent,
Yeah, I'm the
but
same way.
it is a fun movie regardless. Moving on though, I'm going to say that I'm going to pick a Scorsese picture and say that I adore The Aviator. Which is the DiCaprio picture about Howard Hughes. I think it's one of DiCaprio's better roles. And an incredible supporting cast as well, featuring Cate Blanchett and John C. Reilly and just Alan Alda, Alec Baldwin, and everyone just at the top of their game. But really one of the, I think one of DiCaprio's best performances to date, and of all the like collaborations he's done with DiCaprio, with Scorsese, I should say. This is the one that really like cemented that relationship for me.
All right, very cool.
Number two, I'm going to cheat very slightly, and say that Top Gun and Top Gun Maverick together would be my number
No,
two.
you gotta pick one of them. You gotta pick one.
I gotta pick one.
Yeah, because
Oh, come on,
I'm
man.
giving I can't what I'm supposed to give points to both? Come on, that's not fair. No.
That's sick. Well, in that case, then let's go with Top Gun, the first one, the original, the one I grew up with,
Okay.
the 80s classic, which is a very slight movie, and but also like maybe it might be the perfect encapsulation of just the 1980s as a decade. A little bit slight, very jingoistic, very pumped up on itself, a little bit homoerotic, and just America, like hoorah, and also just I do think we don't talk about it a lot, but I actually do think that Tom Cruise is really good in it. I think it's one of an earlier example of him really giving his all to an action role, and really. Like, I think it's I don't think it's the one that really solidified him as like a huge star, but it certainly didn't hurt. And I think that if his performance in it wasn't as good, it wouldn't have been as influential as it is.
Okay.
Yeah. And then last but not least, since we're talking about airplane movies, we get to talk about my all-time favorite movie, which is just Airplane. The 1981 Zucker Abrams Zucker. 1980, Zucker Abrams Zucker classic, which I have seen more times than is countable. And is a movie that I love because, it's hilarious start to finish. Sure, some of it's a bit dated and problematic now, but the beauty of a film that is as funny as this one is that if you don't like a joke, you just have to wait 5 seconds for the next one, which will probably be hilarious. And also just, it is also so dense with jokes that, like, there have been things, I've talked about this in other podcasts, but, like, I think it was only last year or the year before I noticed a joke for the first time. And again, I have seen this movie more times than I can count, but there was, there's a moment that I noticed for the first time, yeah, just like 2 or 3 years ago.
Right. I understand that.
So there's, it's so dense. There's so many things happening in literally every frame. You know, we all remember the, you know, surely you can't be serious jokes. But yeah, there's just so many to go on. And a great example of how deep and dense it is that anytime the jet plane is on screen, there's turboprop noises in the background, which I find hilarious.
Okay. That's fair. Makes sense.
True story. There's a great dialogue exchange that happens a number of times in the movie where, Peter Graves is captain over on the plane, and someone will say, "Do you want me to do some task?" And he says, "No, why don't you take care of it?" And in my career as a manager of people, I did that joke a lot. Basically, anytime anyone asked me if I wanted them to do something, I'd say, "No, why don't you take care of it?" So this movie's had a very profound influence on my life.
That is very fair. That is very fair. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for the list.
And true story, if you get a chance to see it, it's actually based on a Canadian made-for-TV movie called Zero Hour.
I've seen it.
Which is also very good.
I've seen it.
I really like it. I think it's a really great example of like a 50s melodrama. And it's incredible how much of the script and just the scene and camera work of that movie is lifted whole cloth into Airplane, but somehow becomes hilarious.
Yes.
Based on the context or some tweak of the performance.
Right. Yeah. No, I've seen it. I've always been a big fan of Dan Andrews. So, you know, I like it. It's not as good as Airplane. You know, that's what it comes down to.
It's not as good.
But
it's also a totally different kind of movie, but it's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah. And, you know, the main character's name is Ted Stryker.
Yeah. So. Which is not an invitation to hit anybody.
No. No, but that's Tony Decker. Decker? Yeah. No, Stryker. You're right. That was a Stryker joke, not a Decker. There is a Decker here also. But yeah. All right. Great. So, Matthew, you want to once again tell people where they can find Matthew Simpson?
Yeah, like I said, the easiest way to do that is to go to my personal website, which is stretched.ca. You can find links to all my recent work, as well as all my social medias, of which there are a ton now. You can also find me on the social medias. The main ones would be Twitter and Instagram. And at this point, basically Blue Sky, where I am at SmatthewAF, at SmatthewAF, and at Smatthew, respectively. And you can also find me on the Awesome Friday podcast, my regular weekly movie review podcast, which you can find on your podcasting platform of choice.
All right. Excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate and review and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com, or you can find me on Facebook. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here